Welcome to the Wheel of Time podcast. We are the Lorehounds, your guides to Randland. I'm David.
And I'm John, and this is our coverage of the Amazon Prime original series, The Wheel of Time.
In this podcast, we're going to do a scene-by-scene breakdown of Season 2, Episode 1, A Taste of Solitude.
Be sure to stick around to the end of the podcast for programming notes about our podcasting schedule for the rest of September.
For early and ad-free access and exclusive content, visit us at patreon.com/thelorehounds. If you are enjoying what we are recording and you want to maybe give us a leg up, consider leaving us a review and or a rating on Apple Podcasts. Ratings and reviews help people find our podcast even in the Aiel wastes.
We love to respond to your questions, thoughts, and theories on air, so send us feedback for the next episode we record. As a reminder, we're recording these episodes in advance with screeners, so your feedback may be read later on.
Send emails to wot@thelorehounds.com or head to our website, and there you can use our nifty voicemail feature, or there's a contact form. You can also post a message in our Discord server, and we can include those as well. We've got an active community. We've got a channel set up. We've got, I think you even got a book spoiler channel set up.
We do. It got to be such a big conversation.
Right.
It was getting tricky with people with spoiler tags. So yeah, we have to silo this off.
Nice. Silo. Hello. So yeah, links in the show notes for all of those things. Yeah. Join us in the community. Send us your feedback. We're really excited about this season and we're looking forward to your fan theories, feedback, comments about production, all that good stuff.
It's a pretty mysterious plot this season, it seems like already. So I hope people will write in because we got a lot to talk about.
That makes me happy to hear that from such a devotee. Such a fan of the books that you
are. Oh, no, I know what's happening.
Oh, okay.
There's a good mystery there for if you don't.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I think one of the things that I would be excited for is for book readers to feel excited and to feel like they're being surprised and delighted by all the material, even if they know what it is, to still see how things are being done or rolled out. That means that they're really thinking about the production in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, there are things that I don't know how they're going to execute because there's a lot of different moving parts here than in the books at this point. Right. But I can see where they're taking the plot points and molding them into a made-for-TV thing. I'll save my general impressions for a moment from now. But this is actually a pretty good segue to our background on this.
Yes.
Which is that you have not read the books.
I am so far out of the loop on this that I didn't even know who Robert Jordan was. And I feel weird about that because I do enjoy a lot of science fiction and fantasy stuff. And I just don't know how I missed all of these books and this huge fandom. And so,
I mean, there's 14 of them on the shelf. How'd you miss them at the library?
I don't know. It's just one of those things. I watched season one. That was my first entree into the franchise, to the world, to the storylines. And so here I am sitting on the cusp of season two, really ready to learn and partake. And I think part of our construction for the podcast is that I'm sort of the audience proxy who similarly has not engaged with these worlds before. And so I think for me, it's going to be a lot of learning and validating and confirming and trying to understand this big storyline that we're getting.
Right. Yeah. So I have read the books. The whole series once. I've read many of the books several times. And I often keep it running when I'm falling asleep because it's soothing to me and I feel comfortable in that world.
Nice.
So I've read many of the scenes or I've listened to many of the scenes many times.
Are you taking a warm bath like Moraine is in the bathing in the water in the words of Jordan?
Oh, boy. That's something we have to discuss when we get in. But they are making this show a lot more the Moiraine show than it is in the books.
Okay.
Moiraine is not quite as central in the books.
Interesting.
And I think it's just because they have Rosamund Pike.
Right. And you use her, right? Yeah. You know.
Right. But I'm still on the fence. I haven't made my decision. I have not decided if that's going to be a good thing or a bad thing because I think Moiraine works best when she's a little mysterious. And I don't know if we're getting that.
So, yeah, well, maybe we'll Well, yeah. Well, I mean, we've just got one episode, right? So we have a whole lot more to go. Right. We haven't even really shifted focus to a lot of the other characters deeply. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Cool.
So we do have screeners, as we mentioned, but we're not watching ahead. So you and I have not watched episode 2.
Correct.
We're going to be recording these, you know, a few days apart so that we have time to prep. But these are all going to drop the day of the premiere, the triple premiere.
Right.
So Friday, September 1st, these should all be in your feed a couple hours apart. That way it has time to populate the feeds and we don't annoy people with several different notifications at the same time.
Right. Fair enough.
All right. And we're not going to spoil the books. We're not going to spoil future in the books. We'll talk about comparisons with things that have happened in the show.
Right.
In the books. But that's it. That's all we're going to talk about with the books. We're not going to, you know, I'm not going to use my book knowledge to be like, I know what's going to happen. It's
you don't want to prance around with a little knowing smile.
It gets annoying when you have that on a podcast. It's going to get annoying. So I'm not going to do that. I'm going to, you know, I'm just not going to comment on something that I know, you know.
Sure. Fair enough. Do we have a code word? Do we have our own code word?
Oh, the wheel weaves. That's what I'm going to say.
All right. Perfect. I like it. All
the
right.
Wheel weaves is the wheel wells.
Speaking of weaving wheels, we have a White Tower segment that
is
going to happen. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So Alicia, who you might know from our MC Universe podcast, she's a co-host and she has her own feed on our network called Woolshift Dust, where she's currently going through the Dune series and not just, it's a strange thing. We'll talk about it more at the end, but it's not straightforward as just the books. It's the books, the video games, the movies, the whole Dune world. Anyway, when she's not buried in sand, she is going to be with me at the end of every episode, except we're going to start the third episode because it's all coming out the same day. We don't want to regurgitate exactly what we're saying three times.
Right.
So we're going to start the third episode. Then we're going to start talking book spoilers at the end of the third episode. That will be clearly marked. We will say David is leaving. And when David
leaves, hustle everybody out with me. Yep.
The book spoilers will begin. And so you will have a chance to leave. Do not worry. All right, I think that is basically it for structural notes. I think it's time for hot takes.
Well, my, I guess, take on this is, I guess I'm sitting in a bath of lukewarm water, like Moraine here. I had to do a lot of work to remember who these characters were, what had gone on. I mean, I did, I watched the whole episode, including, you know, obviously the previously
I thought the recap was well done. I thought it was pretty thorough.
So. And even so, not being a person very familiar with these and the, you know, season one, we watched it a while. I haven't rewatched it in a while. It was last year. Obviously there were issues around production and all kinds of other things. And so I just noticed myself going, wait, oh, who is that character again? Wait, how are these people? Okay, I don't know what this is, but I'm just going to set it aside and trust that the story is going to unfold and you'll explain things to me. And, you know, that kind of attitude.
Yeah, we'll
like,
get through
okay,
it.
I'm going on a ride here. I'm just going to go for it. This felt like a very episode one episode for me. Mm-hmm. It was not hot. It wasn't cold. We had, you know, it's a beautiful looking show. I think they learned a lot from Rings of Power and are applying, some of those post-production techniques to the visuals here.
Yeah. And they even said in an AMA, Rafe Judkins said in an AMA over the season break, we're reworking the weaves for season two. And I think they did much better with the weaves, with the system visuals in season two.
I don't have an opinion yet. I suppose I'd have to go back and look at a season one episode to really compare. They look nice. They look fine.
Yeah, season one had that like wispy, everything was white for the men, white for the women, black for the men. It wasn't changing for the different elements. Now, I will tell you that the books say it's invisible to anyone who can't channel. And even the people who can channel, it's just kind of a glow. It's not like you can, it's not like it's this corporeal.
Okay.
So this is a show creation, and I think it's a good thing that they added it because
we need it.
It helps you
I need it.
As a viewer. Yeah. That's a good TV adaptation. But I don't think they nailed it season one, and I think they really did a much better job this season already.
Okay, that's good to hear. I'm glad. But yeah, otherwise, I think it, like I was saying, it was a solid episode one for season two, bringing us back in the world, giving us the updates on where everybody is and sort of the state of play. I like that they held back any of the storylines with Rand to, you know, wait till the end.
Yeah.
Because the whole episode that kept my energy up, like, okay, where is he? Where is he? Where is he? What's going on with him?
Right.
And then they, you know, just gave us a little bit at the end. And I felt like
they seasoned it with Rand.
Exactly. It was nice. It was like salt, right? A little too much. And it's, you can't
eat. Well, I think they more seasoned it with ginger.
Okay.
All right. All right.
Easy, John. Easy. But it was good. That was a good little joke. So I'm feeling fine. Like I said, not hot, not cold. I'm in the world and I'm ready to go.
Cool. Well, since we're ready to go, I think it's time to get into our episode breakdown.
Well, wait, what about you?
I didn't get my hot takes, did I?
No, you didn't. You got to have your hot cakes.
I thought it was great. I was hot on this episode.
Yeah.
Part of it was they really nailed a couple set pieces from the books. They really nailed the Dark Friend Social, which is the opening scene, which is the, I believe it's in the prologue of book two. So it is the opener of book two.
Got it.
And they just ripped that right out of the book. It was done differently, but done in a way that worked really well for TV.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved it. I loved it. I loved how they hinted at the different people who were there.
Yeah, yeah. Lots and of Easter eggs.
I've written down the clues so that we can discuss them as we get there. But cool. I really like that. I really like the scene with Moiraine, Lan, and the Myrdrals around.
Mm-hmm.
That was great.
Oh,
that
right. Yeah, great. Yeah. That's fight
straight
scene
out of the books, too.
Okay. Yeah. That was a little bit hair-raising, right? We had some... Yeah, that we'll talk about it when we get there, I guess. It was pretty intense. And I was surprised at the degree that they went with what happened in the fight.
Okay.
It was not an easy fight for Moraine and Lan.
It wasn't. And I like that though. I like that because there's this thing where I think it's season one, Moiraine felt very, very powerful most of the time.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And in the books, they make very clear that one Aes Sedai is not enough to fight off an army, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They can work together and do that, but it's not possible for someone to really fight off an army alone. And I like that they're limited like that. I like that they're not these, you know, godlike beings running around. So I'm really excited to see more. I'm really hot on the season. I'm hoping that it continues to impress me, and all good things so far.
Okay, cool. That's a good starting. I'm happy.
Cool. All right, I'm going to start the scene-by-scene breakdown here. So,
sounds good.
If you haven't been with us before, basically one of us will read a synopsis of a scene, the other one will begin the reaction, and then we'll talk about it.
Sounds good.
All right, we open on a drone shot of a six-pointed building. A young girl runs from Trollocs and bursts into the house, hiding under a table where a group of people are having a meeting, including the Dark One and Padden Fane. The Dark One looks under the table and calls the girl out. When she confirms there's a monster outside, he opines on the things people call him and the other Chosen, including monsters, father of lies, betrayer of hope, and forsaken. He takes the girl out to the Trollocs and says they're just hungry. He pets one, has her do the same, and asks if she thinks he's a monster, to which she responds, no. What did you think of this scene, David? The Dark Friend Social.
It was interesting in as much as when we were talking in pre-production, it came up that at the end of season eight, they had thrown in a new scene. Episode eight of season one.
Yeah. Yep.
And so I went back and I watched that and I was like, oh, okay, this is interesting. And then we started this up and it was the same scene. And I was like, oh,
right,
okay.
Yeah. They just give you the first scene of season two.
Exactly. And so I watched it twice in that regard, and I thought it was interesting. The little girl is compelling, and you know, the Trollocs are running at her, and I was like, oh, okay, you know, here we go. You know, peaceful little village house, whatever, being attacked by monsters.
Yep.
But nope, inside there's a whole bunch of other villainous people.
Yep. Yeah.
I really like you were saying before about how they deployed this scene, because in a written way, it could be the point of view and the description is going to be handled very differently. And then so having the little girl underneath seeing all the boots and all the little clues and that kind of stuff, I thought that was, it was really great. So, I noticed a few other things too. In the courtyard in front where she was playing amongst, there were five stone statues with a yin yang style symbol on them. Mm-hmm. And one of them was laying on the side broken.
Ah, okay. So, that's interesting. I didn't catch that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. There's a big stone things. And then at some point there's a pan back and you can see that there's four other ones.
Right. So I want to talk about who is at the table.
Yes.
Because there are clues that you can, as the viewer, currently figure out the factions of the different attendees, at least.
Okay.
I'm going to give you the clues. David, I'm going to see if you can figure out who it is as we go.
I'm going to have a hard time doing
that. I don't know how much I should say because I know who everybody is at this table.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, this is a recreation of who's at the table. But let me give you the clues here. We see the hands and garb of them under the table, including one with two extremely long fingernails on each hand, one with a great serpent ring,
uh-huh,
and one wearing the emblem of a hawk. So let's start with fingernail.
I'm still so new to the world that I'm really unsure a lot, but I can say, so I'm just taking wild swings here. So apologies if I get things right or wrong. The fingernails, is that the boat people that came at the end of season?
It does
two?
Match that, doesn't it?
That's the only thing that I can think
it
of.
It does
that,
match
that is
the
a
look.
Really stylized and kind of over the top look to their garb and stuff.
Right.
The hawk people, aren't they the people that they were with at the big battle at the end out on the yep. wastelands? Isn't that lands people?
No, well, it's not really lands people. It's two different nations, but he's friends with them. Yeah. He was basically raised there. Yeah.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah.
And then the black stone thing, isn't the rings are Aes Sedai.
That is an Aes Sedai ring. Correct.
But then we have those other people who, I apologize, I don't remember their names. They walk around in white and they like basically kill Aes Sedai.
The white cloaks.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
But they don't wear the rings. They wouldn't wear the rings.
No, but that's what it made me think of is that they have those dangling, you know, of all of the ones that they've eliminated. So
speaking of the white cloaks, we did see some white gloves on top
totally.
Of the table.
And white cufflinks.
Mm-hmm. So it does seem that there could be a white cloak among these people.
Right.
I think those are all the clues we get to people, but I think we've gone over everyone we can.
Okay.
I want to talk about what the Dark One says to her. They call the other chosen and
yes.
I terrible things. What does that mean to you?
The other chosen. So are our protagonists, are they chosen? Are they all?
Well, he called himself and the other chosen, he said.
Right, that's what I mean. Who else is chosen?
Right.
Who else can be chosen? Chosen by whom? By what? The Weave, I'm guessing.
Great question.
So power, the you know, beings that have been, that are important to the wheel turning and all of that kind of stuff. And the only other kind of primary characters I can think of is our primary protagonists, right?
Okay.
Nynaeve and Egwene and everybody else. So
right.
Are they chosen? I don't know. I mean, is Rand chosen? I don't know. I guess I don't have enough information yet
right.
to be.
Right.
But it is I think it's a really good question. Like me and the other chosen, who are the other chosen?
They drop a lot of names and lore here that I was honestly surprised they did at this point.
Okay.
And I think that it doesn't make sense out of context. And when you go back and rewatch it, you'll see that they were giving the whole plot away here.
Oh, nice. Okay, cool. I like that. I like that.
Which will be great. And I'll just say the wheel weaves here.
Because the nice thing when they do that type of stuff is for people who are really familiar with the property, they get excited and you're like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
We're going on.
That's why I love the scene so much.
Right. And then for us, for that, we don't know. We don't know that we don't know. It's like, okay, you know, whatever, you know, it's a cool scene. It's interesting. Great. And on a rewatch, it'll be more fun. So right as they're walking out to go look at the Trollocs, there was the guy who was at the market who at the very beginning of season one, Padden Fain.
Padden Fain, yep.
Right.
And he's the guy who stole the Horn of Valir at the end of the season.
Right. That's it. Right. Okay. So
they're hunting with Perrin.
Right. I knew that they were hunting somebody. I wasn't quite sure. I thought it was him, but I wasn't. But if he has the horn, why is the horn here at this council thing?
Good question. I would say probably.
Okay. We see the horn in other trailer shots, you know, in teasers for the rest of the season. So, is the little girl, she's a total show construction, right? She is not in the
books. Yeah. She's not there in the books.
Okay.
In fact, they don't even meet in this area in... Actually, I guess that might not be true. They don't meet quite at this area in the book.
Okay. And then the last question is, does the shape of the building that they're meeting in have any significance that you can
and I have a book theory. It's not something that is in the books, but we think we know where they're going with it based on the books.
Okay.
But cool. We'll save that for the White Tower.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I just noticed that, like, that was a very specific building that they made sure that we saw with the drone shot looking straight down so that we really got the structure of this thing.
Yeah, I agree. So regarding the Horn of Valir, the whole second book is called The Great Hunt, and it's the hunt for the Horn of Valir.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be this thing that you need to follow throughout.
So this is the MacGuffin season. For the season.
That's probably the MacGuffin for at least part of the season, because we know they're combining books 2 and 3 here.
So now with the horn, that's a necessary condition for the last battle.
It has to be at the last battle.
Right. That's what I remember from season 1 was that is a necessary element to the last battle being the last battle.
Right. Now, I don't know how much they're going to give us right away about what the horn does and why it needs to be at the last battle. Okay. So I will leave that for now and save that for when that comes up in the show.
I will say that the shots that we have seen of it in the trailers and such, it's a cool looking prop.
Yeah.
I hope they had fun making that because it looks dope.
Yeah, it does look cool. All right, let's move on to the next scene. After an abbreviated title sequence, which was a little strange. I'm surprised they didn't do the full theme song in this.
Okay.
We see Moiraine carrying 2 pails of water up a hill and doing a variety of other chores with a despondent expression before crying in the bath. Outside, Lan trains with his sword. Aes Sedai, Varen, and Adelais, and Varen's warder, Tomas, greet Lan on his way to tell Moiraine she's getting her 20th visitor. We learn Moiraine has been shutting him out. Lan then introduces Moiraine's visitor from Ilium, who turns out to be Bael Domin. A lot of names there.
Yeah.
Some of them were not given in this, but they are in the credits, so I'm not spoiling anything.
Okay.
And also, I will mention that this is a very brilliant condensation of... Is condensation the right word?
No.
It's a brilliant...
Condensing.
A condensing. Condensing. Yes. We're not getting water.
Do not at John on Apple Podcast reviews for language choices.
So anyway, there's a brilliant condensing here of book material. Because Varen is not here in the books. There's a different Aes Sedai, but they've just replaced her with Varen, who is a character who is really great, but doesn't show up in this way. And this is a great way to bring different characters together. So I'm really glad they did this. So we've got 2 Aes Sedai and we're hosting Moiraine and Lan.
So this is one of those, beyond the Moiraine and Lan stuff, With these other 3, I was a little confused. I don't remember them from season 1.
They weren't in it. Yeah.
Okay.
They're new. They cast Varen for season 2. I remember.
Oh, phew! I was worried that
you're
missing good. Something that I should have known something. I was getting nervous about this.
You're all good. All new people.
So these, Varen and
Adelais.
And Tomas,
mm-hmm.
are they retired?
No, Adelais might be. I think she is in the book. Mm-hmm. But Varen is certainly not retired. She's an active member of the White Tower.
Okay.
She's a member of the Brown Aja.
Okay.
Which is the really like book nerdy Aja. They would right, fit the in librarian. With the Lorehounds. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Lorehound, yes. Yep. our Aja, right. As it were.
Exactly.
So, okay, got it. So this is one of those scenes, like I was saying, I just had to accept what I was seeing and not question it because I didn't understand what was going on. Right. So it's all fair enough. Right. And it all makes sense ultimately that they're chilling. Moiraine's doing research. She's feeling right. very sorry for herself.
Yes, she is. And she's not, by the way, she's not cut off from the source in the books here.
Okay.
This is a show creation, so I don't know where they're going with it. So that's something that they can surprise and delight me with.
Okay. I didn't really, we'll get into more of it a little bit later, but I didn't really understand why she was cutting Lan out so much. There's a lot to talk about there. I think we should save it
because
we've got some more specific scenes for that. Lan's looking fit.
He sure is. My wife was saying, that's my boyfriend, you know?
Well, you know, if we can get Lan and Emperor Cleon Day, you know, in the same room together, I think we might melt the internet. So.
I know. Great stuff. Do you think they would share their fitness routines?
I'm sure the fitness people who do their fitness routines would be happy to sell you a package of videos and workbooks, you know.
Right. P90X.
Exactly. So, I mean, all of this felt very set up and reminding us of, you know, Moraine was supposedly cut off from the source. And I remember from season one, there was a scene where they were in the bath together and he was like, oh, it's a little cold. And she's like, okay, no problem. And she, you know, heats it up. So it was a nice callback for me to ground me back from season one to now and then show me the difference between now and then, right? She doesn't have her power. She's not with Lan. And we're in this sorrowful, pitiful state.
Now, Bail Doman, though, I think he nailed the accent of the Ilioners. They have this very distinctive accent in the Wheel of Time world. They go, it do be that way, you know, like that kind of stuff instead of it is that way, it do be. And he nailed it. I loved it. I love that they're bringing this to life. The different cities, the different kingdoms within Ranlan has always been something that's delighted me about the Wheel of Time. And it felt a little bit small in season one. It felt like we were all in the wilderness all the time. We're not really visiting a lot of places. And I'm really glad that we're finally getting more diverse people in this world.
Okay.
More diverse cultures, you know?
Right, right. And again, this was just material I just had to accept on faith. Was he introduced in season one?
No, he's brand new. Okay. He's brand new.
Got it. Okay,
cool. He is a book character. He's a beloved book character. So I'm glad he's in here. He was one that's beloved, but I could have seen them cutting. Uh-huh. And I'm glad that they kept him.
And gave him some depth and some stuff to do.
Right. All right. The next scene, we get a montage of Egwene doing chores as a novice in the White Tower. Nynaeve is upset that they haven't done anything but chores since they got there. But Egwene is bought into the system. Alana begins a lesson that starts with the five threads of the One Power: air, earth, fire, spirit, and water. She gives each novice a glass of dirty water and shows them a weave to purify it. She tells each of them they will drink the water at the end of the session. Alana tries to get Nynaeve to touch the source, which she hasn't done in her 5 months as a novice, but her pep talk falls flat. Nynaeve chugs the dirty water and storms off.
That was pretty funny. She's like, here's your lesson. Here's your, you know, whatever. And stuff it. I really liked this tour that Nynaeve took us on through the White Tower.
Yes.
So we get to see all these different aspects of life and things that are going on. I liked the construction as well. They show very clearly at least once her scraping or dumping wine or whatever, or dumping glasses into her bucket and scraping food into her bucket. And so that when we get to the object lesson for the novices, we're already connected with that. We're like, not cool. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So I loved the lesson. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
so,
and I think
it's so good.
You know, and okay, so super trope. I think the school of magic is a super trope, you know, these days, and we have lots. Even we even going back to Ursula K. Le Guin and Earthsea, right?
I would say that's first, but Wheel of Time predates Harry Potter as far as the school of magic.
Fair enough. And then every other story, you know, fantasy story, there's some sort of school of magic-y thing. So fair enough.
Discworld has its unseen university. We got plenty of them around.
Right. Ender's Game is, it's not magic, but, you know, there's an academy and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So if you're playing with that trope and then, you know, the mistress comes in and she's like, okay, Alana comes in and says, okay, here's your lesson for today. She's not challenging them. She is challenging them. She's not doing it in a overly brutal way, but at the same time, here is a very important, you have to try. Right. And if you've got to have some skin in the game. And if you don't want to drink this gross water, you know, you've got to really figure out how to touch the source and weave these two things together. So I really liked the way that they played with the whole school of magic trope here. And brought it, I just brought a different perspective on it. I enjoyed the scene.
Yeah, I really liked it. I liked the way that she took the two weaves and did that together. It looked really tangible. Mm-hmm. It looked really corporeal. And when she's pouring it through, that looked like a really cool effect. It's dirty on one end, it's clean on the other. Nynaeve, I gotta say, she is a brat. But I like early show Nynaeve 20 times more than I like early book Nynaeve, who I think is so obnoxious, and I almost didn't want to read her chapters.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm glad that they've improved her for the show. And I feel like I empathize with her more in the show. She's got a lot more speaking out loud about how she's feeling and how frustrated she is. And I like that they've added that here. So that's a good change for me. Something else that they changed from the book is that Nynaeve comes into the White Tower in the books and they say, you're too powerful to be a novice and you're too old to be a novice. We're going to test you for Accepted now, which is the next level up. It's not quite Aes Sedai, but it's in the middle. And here it seems like, unless I'm corrected otherwise in a future episode, seems like she's a novice. She is at level one, just like Egwene.
Right. Yep. That's what my read was. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm glad they did that because she needs a reality check here.
Okay.
She absolutely needs to be taken down a notch. She thinks she knows everything because she was the wisdom and she was, you know, she was the person who people would go to for advice and training and healing in her village. And now she's all of a sudden big fish in a big pond,
right?
Instead of big fish in a small pond. And that's a hard thing for anybody. And it's a hard thing for Nynaeve. And I love that.
All right, you were a hot sports player in high school and suddenly you go to college and you're playing at a higher level division. Right. You suddenly realize that everybody is as good as you are, if not better.
Right.
So I like to something I wanted to point out, and I think this was consistent across seasons, that they're really casting far and wide and bringing in a lot of different actors, and it feels good. It doesn't feel like there's any one overrepresentation or an underrepresentation. Right. So if they bring in another actor, then we're suddenly like, oh, we noticed the difference. No, they're just starting off with a very diverse looking world, and that's good. And just keep running with that. Keep doing that. I like it. I like all these actors that they've picked for the Aes Sedai. There's not an Aes Sedai actor I haven't met yet that I haven't been intrigued by and really like their look and their mannerisms and what they're putting into the characterization. So good stuff.
Yeah, I agree. And also it makes sense because this is a pretty wide continent, Ranland. Mm-hmm. Again, there's no real name for this world. There's no name for this region in the books. So people just call it Ranland. Okay. That's just what people colloquially call it as. It's a wide continent and young girls will learn that they can channel all throughout the continent, from different countries, from different cultures, and they'll be sent to the White Tower because they have this monopoly on channeling.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what they think, at least.
Right.
And it looks it. Right.
In this production. Right.
And they feel like they should have a monopoly on it. You know, they think that it's not safe to have someone out there channeling who's not trained by us because we know the way to channel. We know the right way to channel.
Well, I think the Jedi Council thought that they knew a few things too. So.
Right. Right.
We'll see.
Good comparison. I want you to keep that in mind as we go right. forward. Are the Aes Sedai the same as the Jedi in terms of too attached to principles and too rigid?
Too set in their ways. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Nice. Cool.
Right. Mistress of Novices Sheriam checks in with Alana, Leandrin, and other Aes Sedai on the new novices. Leandrin volunteers to tutor Nynaeve, but Leandrin has been prohibited from teaching after a novice died in her care.
Whoopsie.
Leandrin emphasizes that there is a new false dragon more powerful than Loghain, and the world is dangerous. Reluctantly, Sheriam gives Leandrin permission to talk to Nynaeve. Nynaeve. Freudian slip.
Yeah. So this was again an interesting scene. I'm learning more about the world, trying to understand who and what's happening here. But I think by the end of the scene, I really understood. Okay, this is everybody's checking in. How is the new
staff
freshman
meeting.
Yeah, how are the freshman class doing? Right.
Right.
And to see Leandrin back, and she is very much that I remember her in season two.
Yep.
Super intriguing, super powerful, super harsh. And I remember that she's got some secrets and maybe some hypocrisies in her closet.
Right.
She is not throttled down at all from season one. She is
no.
leaning forward as much or if not ever than in this season. So all cool stuff. Great setup for some conflict and drama.
Yeah. What do you think of Sheriam, the Mistress of Novices?
She seemed very mistressy.
Yes. Yeah.
Very
perfect casting, I thought.
Regal, and she's what's the blue Aja?
Blue Aja is like causes social justice, you know, quests of it's Gryffindor, you know, if you're a Harry Potter person, it's Gryffindor. And that's what Moiraine's is. She's Blue Aja.
Right. Yeah, that's right. But interesting because Moiraine was like a far flung agent, right? She's out in the world checking on things, listening and things, fixing little problems here and there. Whereas if you have the Mistress of Novices as a Blue Aja, that's a very rooted character.
Well,
like you have to be there and paying attention to the home front.
I'll tell you exactly why this happened. Is the Ammerlin seat, Swan Sanch, was blue, and so is her second in command. And then it's like when you have a change in political party in the real world, you put your administration in, right?
Got
so it's
it.
That kind of a deal here.
And I remember that the color of the Aja for the Ammerlin seat was kind of a important detail in the political maneuverings from season one. I remember that as well.
So the idea is you're supposed to give up your Aja and become of all colors when you're Ammerlin seat, just like the president of the United States is supposed to be representing everyone instead of just their party. But you know how that goes.
Right? Or if you're an Istari, you're the white, right? You represent all the Istari.
Yeah, it's Swan of many colors.
Mm.
So yeah, that's basically the deal with that is, and you'll see that. Moiraine has a line later. I have it here. The sea folk may play the game well, but the Aes Sedai invented it. You know, it's this. The Aes Sedai are very political all the time.
Okay,
and they are super into their power dynamics. There's this whole thing of like Aes Sedai like respect each other more if they're more powerful in the power. Which doesn't seem like a good measure of who's a better leader, but whatever.
Right. Question, there was one Aes Sedai in this meeting who didn't have hair, and she's wearing like a kind of a teal bluish colored.
Mm-hmm. I have no idea who that is at this
and
point.
And she actually speaks. She asks a question. Okay. Do you know what Aja she was? Is that a?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. There's no teal Aja. As far as no. There's a green Aja. There's
no
blue
mauve,
Aja.
No mauve, no pumpkin spice Aja.
No pumpkin spice Aja.
That sounds like a Spice Girl spice. Anyway, I should move away from this topic. I'm getting in trouble. I bet she's just a blue.
Yeah, could be. But we know reds are there because Leandrin's there.
Right.
So we'll see. All right, David, I think it's time to take a quick break. When we get back, we'll continue the episode.
Uh-oh, the holidays are really coming up fast, aren't they? But to quote Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, don't panic. Uncommon Goods has you covered, giving you access to thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can browse stress-free from the comfort of your own couch. And if Hitchhiker's Guide fans want to follow that book's other most important piece of advice, but find that you do not in fact know where your towel is, Uncommon Goods can help you out there too. From a wearable toga towel to a beach towel that doubles as a backgammon board, complete with oversized wooden playing pieces. Hello, my name is Alicia, and I am addicted to Uncommon Goods. I honestly can't think of another site that has something for everyone in my family, from my sports-loving dad, to my foodie mom, to my sister, the board game fan. Whatever you choose will feel special, personal, high quality. It will be something your recipients keep, something that makes them feel seen. Uncommon Goods likes to stock products from independent craftsmen or small businesses, which are often handmade or in the U.S., so you can feel good about where your money's going, especially since with every purchase you make, Uncommon Goods will give $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. And bonus, we can help you score a 15% discount. So don't wait. Make this holiday the year you give something truly unforgettable. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/lorehounds. That's uncommongoods.com/lorehounds for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
And we're back, and we're ready to head on with Perrin, who writes a letter and talks with Loial about the loss of Rand and the missing whereabouts of Matt. They're on the hunt for Padden Fain and the Horn of Valir with a troop of Shinarans when they find a burning village with all the villagers killed. Perrin's wolf senses help him recreate the carnage in his mind. The tracker says a child made it out of the village. Then they find a Shinaran dark friend who Ingtar orders buried. So we know where the little girl came from.
Right. Yep.
At least that's what how I read it.
You know, at the beginning of this, as we started recording, I kind of forgot that, but I remember in watching the episode that they connected those dots, or yeah. You know, they laid the breadcrumbs for that, and I think I just sort of forgot that detail. So
yeah, I think that's what you're supposed to get out of that. Although I don't know if it's going to matter much. I think it's just more satisfaction of we know where that person came from.
It'll be interesting to see if they develop the character of the little girl into something, at least as a through line in through the Dark Ones.
Yeah, she just walks through every battle unscathed.
Right,
that's going to be her role.
That's good. The Builder is back.
The Builder, yeah. Loial.
Loial, yeah. So to be honest, I remember at the end of season one when they're having the big battle that Padden Fain makes off with the horn.
Yeah.
But then I remembered this guy with the eye patch, but I don't.
It's Uno.
Uno. Yep. But I don't really recall how this troop got formed and what their mission is.
Yeah,
or who
I
they
think
represent.
That was off screen. Off screen. What I've, with book knowledge, I know they are sent out to find the Horn of Valir and Padden Fain. You know,
by whom?
By the king of Shinar.
Okay,
by the leader of Shinar, yeah.
Because the Shinarians had the horn, right? They
Although
the
I guess,
keeping it?
I believe the leader of Shinar died at the end of last season.
Right.
Which is not something that happened in the book.
Okay.
So I don't know who they were sent out by, but whoever's in charge of Shinar right now sent out a group of, we were supposed to guard this and we did a bad job. Go fix this.
let's go work it out.
Right.
So this dude that they meet in the wasteland.
Yep.
He's got wolfy eyes, kind of like Perrin does. Mm-hmm. Is that it's got to be intentional. You don't show us that without having it mean something as part of the visual language.
I think they are at least telling you that they're similar in their abilities because he's the tracker, right? He's lost the trail. But Perrin also has these extra senses that allow him to see the carnage and whatnot, which I don't know if I love that. You know, how would your senses let you recreate mm-hmm. visual set. Mm-hmm. I didn't love that. I didn't love that scene. That was a little cheesy to me.
Okay. Kind of like in, was that Clone Wars? When the, sorry, I'm pulling a oblique Star Wars reference here to the investigative droid when the Jedi Temple got bombed. Yeah. So, because they did that too. They did a tracking sequence.
I get that that's possible with like forensics, but I don't know. I don't know. I didn't love that scene, but it's fine. It wasn't, it wasn't like a scene killing thing for me. It was just like, I don't really care for this.
Well, they had to lay out some clues for us to understand what it is that we're seeing here and to clue us into the girl's identity. So.
Right. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. The dark friend, that they find.
Yeah.
Why do you think Ingtar is telling them to bury him? I mean, there's a debate about it later. We can talk about it more then, but seems
odd.
The
dark friend. So there's okay. So
the idea was they can tell that the monsters were protecting the Chimera and soldier.
Right.
And he was alone. So they deduced that he was.
Dark friend. A dark friend is
a servant of the dark one.
Right. Yep. An ally, an agent, a servant. Right. Okay.
Someone who's pledged themselves in service to the dark.
Got it. And he's the soldier that they find on the ground in the armor. And then the one guy. Yeah. And then, so the leader of the troop is saying, no, we got to bury, everybody. It's
Right. Do you agree with him?
Yeah. I do. In as much as we need to, It's a way to not create an othering of others, right? It's a way to establish relationship. This person was a person. They made their choices and
led to a lot of other deaths.
It led to a lot of other deaths. And I think, interestingly enough, there's a I hate pulling in all these comps and parables or parallels. There's a parallel in Foundation that's going to come up in an episode. Of, you know, we need to stay connected to that which makes us human. Part of what makes us human is pain, death, these kinds of things. And if we honor our dead, even though they may have been my enemy dead, we're still acknowledging that we're of this world and part of this world. And this, you know, adversary was even part of it as well. So,
right. Okay.
That's my, that's a personal philosophical bend, right? It's not.
So you're on Team Ingtar.
I guess if you're going to put me on a team, do I have to wear a jersey or something?
You do.
Okay.
You do. It has a hawk on it.
All right. Nice. I don't mind the hawk thing. So
it looks pretty good. Cool. Looks,
yeah.
What do you feel about Uno? Foul-mouthed Uno.
Foul-mouthed Uno, the guy with the patch?
Yeah.
I remember him to be he was kind of a jerk last season as well. Mm-hmm. And clearly he's a guy who you know, he leads with his tongue, not his sword.
Yes,
as
yes.
it were. And he reminds me of one of the characters out of Game of Thrones as well, who had not the flaming sword guy. One of the guys.
You're talking about Bronn?
No. There was a brotherhood of that was.
Oh, Beric Dondarrion.
Yeah. That was
who also
out
had an eye patch.
Yes, that's probably. Okay. Maybe it's just an eye. You know, maybe it's just that physical.
He was a little sassy. I think Uno's sassier. You know, he's got
way sassier, way saltier, I would say. Very salty.
I'll have the horn of bloody Valyr. I love him. There's a whole running joke in the books where every time he talks to an Aes Sedai, he's like afraid of them. So he forces himself not to curse, but he keeps starting to. He's like all right. You know, he like stops mid word. It's great. It's great. I'm glad he's in here.
He's clearly battle hardened and survived quite a lot. And so he's not all talk. He's a great counterpoint to the leader of their troop. Remind me his name.
Ingtar. Yep.
Ingtar, who has that strong, silent type thing and very honorable and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it's almost a odd couple type of relationship structure.
Yeah. Okay. So. I buy that.
I'm trying to think of what the Odd Couples guys are. It was not Bert and Ernie because they're an odd couple as well. I'll have to Google this here.
Well, I like them. I'm liking the Shinaran chemistry so far. But let's head back to Moiraine. Bail Doman offers Moiraine a broken piece of Heartstone. Well, Lan complains to Tomas about Moiraine's silence. Lan has been told to leave, but he refuses. Doman explains that the Heartstone was found outside Kyrian, and that there was a poem written in blood in the old tongue when they found it. He asks for 50 marks for the Heartstone and 5 for the transcription of the poem, which Moiraine haggles down to 1. Moiraine then buys only the poem and emphasizes the consequences of insulting an Aes Sedai. We learn that Doman is being followed by men in black cloaks with unseen faces. Moiraine gives him 10 marks for provisions and tells him to run. This is that scene I mentioned. She's like, the Aes Sedai invented the game. The great game. It's, I don't know what came out first, a Game of Thrones or this book, which had the Game of Houses, they called it, which is just basically politics. You know, it's the same thing. It's just politics. Right. And the Aes Sedai are said to like, the city, all the cities are like, oh, we play the game better. And the Aes Sedai are like, yeah, okay. All right. Go ahead, children.
What is it? What's the first one is 1990?
The Great Hunt is the book that you're looking for.
Well, and I was thinking The Eye of the World. I think that's originally published in 1990. Is that correct?
Okay.
That's according to the Googles, according to the internets. Again, one of those scenes where I was like, okay, just take in the knowledge, start, you know, writing notes, keeping track of details. I don't know who this dude is. I don't know what Heartstone is. I don't know any of what's going on. I don't know how much a mark is. Obviously, 50 marks is a lot.
Seems like it.
So I just had to ride with this scene and just take it in and not make too many judgments.
And obviously, I've confirmed, by the way, 96 mm-hmm. for Game of Thrones and 90 for The Great Hunt. He did that also in 1990. So Robert Jordan wins the game. Sorry, George.
Fair enough. And it's all Tolkien soup anyway. So
sure. Although I think that they both have their own flavor of it. You know, I think that there's a lot more politicking. There's a lot more spicy dialogue in both of these other books mm-hmm. than there is in The Lord of the Rings. And so I like for to sure. appreciate them each for what they do well.
Sure. Yeah. I think Tolkien didn't get into the politics in the way that we're thinking of the politics of this, the Game of Thrones style politics for sure. So I'm confused about one other detail. Lan said that Moiraine told him to leave, or is he just picking the vibe? It's just the vibe that.
No, I think he said she wants me to leave. Like I think she just basically told him to go off, because you got to remember, I don't know if they've made this explicit, but the once she can't touch the source, their bond is severed. And I think they hinted at this because he couldn't find her.
Right.
At the Eye of the World in the end of the last season. But so their bond is severed, and that's a hard thing. They've always felt each other. You can sense where your Aes Sedai is if you're a warder. They can sense where you are. You can tell when they're feeling pain or feeling happy, and you can tell their mood. And it's all of a sudden that just goes black. That like piece of your mind goes black.
Right.
And that's traumatic. I mean, people go like nuts after like they have breakdowns after their bond is severed.
So and I got that. And that's clearly told, you know, if you did watch season one, that's clearly told. Like, I clearly understand mm-hmm. that coming into season two.
Had that whole, you know, show plot line.
Right. And then so now I get it. They're feeling in pain and all this kind of stuff. And I just don't. Yeah, I guess I don't understand, you know, what the agita is here. Like, why isn't she talking to him? Why isn't she letting him into this? Why is he?
Yeah, I don't know.
If he's so mad, why isn't he leaving? Now, all of that. And if what you're telling me is when you lose connectivity to the source, when you lose your Wi-Fi connection, it drives you insane, right? I can't abide by a poor internet connection.
It's really bad. Yeah, I can't abide by a poor internet connection. I'll be honest with you.
Then you get severed from your twin, your sort of Gemini twin or whatever. And that's awkward and painful. I get all that. I know what I was going to say. And what that indicates to me is they're showing us that at least they're still functional, that they can still, you know, take a bath and, have, you know, food and socialize with other people. So that they are not so debilitated by their connectivity. What that is telling me is that these are very strong people.
Right.
That these are people who,
especially Moiraine.
Right.
Because Lan hasn't lost his connection to the source. That's it's like almost like an addiction withdrawal with the source, right. Mm-hmm. You know, because yeah. You just get so used to it.
In without fact, your coffee in the morning kind of thing, right? Right?
They just can't start your day. They warn novices at the White Tower, don't rely on the source for everything because you'll start to want to use it too much and you'll risk burning yourself out on it.
Mm, interesting. Yeah. So good storytelling there in giving us understandings of their characters. What is Heartstone?
Yeah, so it's unbreakable. They kind of make this clear in the dialogue, but I'll emphasize it here. It's unbreakable. It is a substance that was made during the Age of Legends. You can't make it anymore. Nobody remembers how to at this point. And so no one can break it even with the one power. That's how strong it is. You just can't break it. And somehow this broke. And there was a poem written in blood on it. What the poem says, I don't know.
Okay.
But it seemed to concern Moiraine.
So is this a detail? Should I just hold this, just bracket it and hold it off to the side for now? Okay.
Yep.
All right.
Yep. And he found it outside Kyrian. We haven't heard that name before, I don't think, which is another city. It's another big city. A lot of book two takes place in Kyrian. I don't know if we're actually going to go there in the show because we're at a lot of different places. We have a lot of different pieces in different places at this point in the show. But I don't know. I don't know. It's I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with all these.
Got it. And then we're going to see this fellow again.
Bale Doman.
Yes, Bale Doman. We're going to see him again, obviously.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so.
He presents well on screen and it took me a moment to get right with the scene a little bit in the sense that here she is, she's playing this haggling game. She absolutely masters him down to one mark.
Yep.
And then she learns that he's being chased by, you know, demons and monsters. Yeah.
Yeah.
And she's like, dude, here's cash. Run, you know, GTFO, like go. Like she actually suddenly cares for him.
Right. But I love that about this, right? Is that
when she's
getting screwed over, she's very harsh. But as soon as there's somebody actually in need, she's ready to go. She's ready to help.
She's like opening up her purse and dumping it out. So,
Yeah.
Cool.
Good scene. In the White Tower, Nynaeve trains with Alana's warders and begins to complain about their Aes Sedai before they give her a polite warning. Nynaeve laments her lack of progress in training to be an Aes Sedai, but the warders tell her their training was much the same at the beginning. They suggest she figure out why she came to the White Tower. I loved Alana Sedai to you because that's also a thing in the book. Nynaeve like refuses to use the honorific Sedai, which is how you would, it's kind of like, you know, MD after,
right.
you just want to like use this honorific after the person's name. And, the novices are all required to do that. Nynaeve just will not, she just will not do it. And I like how she's about to badmouth their Aes Sedai, and they're like, no, that's our wife there.
Now, these are the warders we saw who were in season one. Mm-hmm. And this is part of, if I remember right, the explaining the world to us that the polyamorous relationships are a thing.
The greens. In here. Yeah, the greens are big on that.
Right.
The greens are the only Aja that have more than one warder. That and can have more than one warder.
They're like battle Aja.
They are the battle Aja. Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds like a game, right? Yeah. You know, put that cartridge in and fire it up.
But the thing is, there hasn't. So you're the battle Aja, but your oaths prevent you from using the power as a weapon against anything but dark friends. But you haven't seen dark friends in 100 years since the Trolloc Wars.
Mm,
who are you? What do you do? What's your identity? Mm-hmm. So their identity has fallen more into this romantic, we love men and we're going to have a bunch of warders. It's fallen a lot out of this battle Aja, I think.
Okay.
But now the question is, now that things are heating up in the world again, does the green Aja have what it takes to reclaim that identity?
Interesting. Okay. All right. That's really good context. That's helpful. So that when things start to get active and the Green Ajahs have to step in, are they battle hardened enough to be able to do what they right. need to do? Yeah.
The Green Ajah is pretty green right now.
Yeah, very good. Very, very good. I do like, do you remember the name of these two warders? Because I don't have it at the top of my... So if we're, if I'm remembering right, it's Owain and Ivan.
I think that's how they're pronouncing it in the show. Yeah.
Yeah. The two warders. And I remember that, that there's a, it's not just Chu with Alana. It's one guy's in love with the other guy who's in love with Alana. So it's right. It's an interesting.
It's a triangle a little bit. Yeah.
A little bit. Yeah. But I, there's
some angles going on at least.
Exactly. I remember in season one, when we got into the whole warder stuff and the death of a warder and the culture of warders, I really liked the storytelling that they were doing here and the depth and complexity of these characters, and that were active and participating in a world that is, it's a big world, and there's a lot of different mm-hmm. ways that you can live your life, and there's a lot yeah. of different ways that you can be with somebody that you're in love with or attracted to. And so, again, just normalizing, hey, in this world, this is the way it is, right?
Yeah.
And these are the stories that we're telling, and I just really appreciate the flatlining of that in a way, right? This is just what it is. This is the story.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, there's this thing in the books where they wait a long time to develop a lot of things.
Sure.
And then when they do develop it, when Robert Jordan does develop it, it's great. But what they're doing in the show is they're bringing a lot of stuff from later in the books and
yeah.
not bringing the exact plot points in, but bringing the context in. So warders are really developed later in the books, the bonds between warder and Aes Sedai, the consequences of losing that bond. That's later in the books. Now we get to see that right up front. We're told who these people are. We get more development with them. And I think that was a really good adaptation decision.
Yeah, I think so, because now I have a view into this world of a very important set of characters, right, in this thing. And if I don't have something to care for about them, then I'm not invested in their stories.
Right. I agree. What do you think is Nynaeve's reason in the end for being in the White Tower?
She's just along for the ride. She's got power. She doesn't – yeah, she doesn't – maybe she I don't know what her reason is. I think she is, she needs to figure that out. I think that's true. Mm-hmm. 'Cause she just went along with friends, right? Hey, we're going on this thing. I've got some power. And then it turns out she's got a lot of power, and
right.
I kind of got to do something with that, but she doesn't, it's not like she's responding to the call, or she's not, you know, mm-hmm. inspired by, oh, I really want to, I saw this person from a distance and I want to become like them. She's got a big chip on her shoulder, and she's got to figure that out.
Yeah.
So she can figure out why she's there, for sure.
And then they make it very clear right away, Egwene is powerful. She's more powerful than most Aes Sedai, but Nynaeve is many levels beyond that. She's the most powerful channeler in memory.
Okay, so now I'm confused. Sorry, I got confused between Egwene and Nynaeve now. Sorry,
Egwene is the one who's very into everything. And then Nynaeve is the reluctant one who can't channel right now, but is very
right.
powerful.
Who's training with the warders?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So Nynaeve. So yeah. So she's struggling with identity.
Yeah. So I was mentioning it was dialogue that happened in that earlier scene with the water.
Okay.
Where you know Alana pulls him aside and is like, "Egwene, you are very powerful. You are very powerful compared to basically every other channeler here, except Nynaeve, who is
right."
Tenfold more powerful, you know, just extremely powerful for a channeler.
And so what I was trying to say was Nynaeve needs to find out who she is and what
right.
she's doing here, right? I don't
right,
know if
exactly.
I make sure that, yeah.
Yeah, you were saying that, yep.
Okay, good. I'm learning a lot of names.
I know,
names,
there's a
right?
lot of names here. It's all right. I'll let you know if you misstep.
The listeners will let us know too, hopefully kindly and gently. But I think I remember Nynaeve too was one of my favorite characters coming out of season one. I thought she mm-hmm. had an interesting story, and I
much better
the
in the show.
Yeah,
much better in the show. I like her a lot Fair in the enough. Show, and I like the actor a lot too. I think she's doing a great job.
Yeah, and it's I like that they have her training with these guys. So she's like, okay, well, let me do something easy. Let me
exactly.
fight with this sword.
And what else do you do when you're struggling with something hard is you do something easy. It's like when I used to play the violin, and I was very bad at it. But
oh.
they used to give us lessons, and they used to say, you know, if you are practicing a piece of music and you have one part that is very hard for you, stop starting at the beginning because you'll just keep playing the easy part.
Mm-hmm.
Start at the hard part.
Interesting.
And that's a hard lesson to learn. That is a hard thing to do. And Nynaeve's got to start at the hard part here.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes sense. Yep. And she's doing that by training on the in the fighting arena area, right? That's it's a much more practical and
right. That's the easy part.
Yeah. Cool. Yep. All right.
So Egwene visits Alana for advice about the day's lesson, which Alana misinterprets as a request for sexual advice.
It looked pretty sexual to me.
When Egwene clarifies that she is talking about the weave, Alana advises her to think of the weaves as two larger weaves instead of many. She tells Egwene that things are messy before they're perfect and that nothing worthwhile is neat and tidy. I really liked this scene, this line at the end. I don't know if I need all these like sexual scenes. It's fine. It's not like bothering me, but I'm like, it's not really the vibe of this world, in my opinion.
Okay.
I don't know how you felt.
Yeah, I was like, okay, we're going to go here. You know, I mean, they showed us some stuff in season one. They showed us a little bit in Egwene was walking around doing her rounds, collecting stuff up the White Tarot. So it's like, how far are we going to go here? I mean, it's fine for story stuff. And I did think it was a little icky that a full-on Aes Sedai.
There's a power dynamic there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not, you know, at least in our world, that's not a thing we want to encourage. So it was a little, and it played very well. I mean, I think Alana is she's all that and a bag of chips, right? She is that, and that's cool.
She's very confident in herself, for sure,
in all ways, right? In all ways. So yeah. it was an interesting conversation.
She never felt shame in her entire life.
No,
I'm pretty sure.
No, she is full on. She's living full. I did like the conversation of you know, it's going to get messy, right? It's part of, it's inherent to the way the world works and the way that the system works. It's going to get complicated before you get somewhere with things. So,
yep, I agree. You know. Great line there. And that saved the scene for me. Even if it was a little awkward before that, I was like, yeah, no, that's some good dialogue there. So right. I was glad they added that.
And it's really we're getting a lot of Alana.
We are.
This, so
not quite a big book character. She's in it. She's mm-hmm. moderately around, but she's not this around.
Right. So we'll see it because we've got a lot more to go this season. So we'll see how much more we get of her.
Yep. Liandrin then finds Nynaeve practicing the weave from the lesson. When Nynaeve talks about her warder training, Liandrin demonstrates making a blade out of channeling. She then holds Nynaeve up against the wall with the one power and taunts her until Nynaeve gets angry enough to channel against Liandrin. Liandrin notes that Nynaeve saw the weave once and was able to copy it, and that Nynaeve can use her anger to find a different way to channel. I love Liandrin's line here. I don't want a fair fight. I want to win.
Yeah, right. That's good. I couldn't help in this scene to not have your voice in my head. Let the hate flow through you.
Yeah, I know. It was very Palpatine. Very Palpatine. Very.
But I get it, right? That you're a little constipated here. You're a little blocked up. We got to, you know, use a little shock therapy here to energize your systems. Okay. You know, maybe wouldn't pass health and safety laws in our current culture, but you know, she sort of takes her by the lapels and gives her a shake, and it has an effect. It gets her channeling.
One of the things in the books that I think is most interesting is that Nynaeve's block does not make sense because she has to get angry to channel. She's the Hulk. She has to get angry to channel.
Smash.
But the whole way that Aes Sedai are taught to channel is you have to submit to the one power. You have to submit to the true source. You cannot fight it. You have to become part of it, basically.
Okay.
And Nynaeve has never submitted to anything in her entire life. And so the Aes Sedai are like, how are you even channeling when you're that angry? But that's the only way she can channel. So she's this kind of enigma to them. And I really liked that in the books, and they're keeping that in the show. They're keeping this block of, I need to be angry. I need to Hulk out if I want to use the power.
Got it. And then that's sort of maybe what makes her special and gives her 10X, right? Maybe.
Wheel weaves.
Leandrin is, boy, man, she is spicy. She is hot. She's intense. The actress is just laying down some fire with this role here. So
I liked her blade of wind.
That was very cool. That was really interesting. And in terms of, you know, matching physical actors to CGI work, I never felt that it was off, right? It felt
I agree. It felt really good.
Yeah. And I'm looking at a scene here of it, and it has kind of a greenish cast to the weave power. So I don't know. They're coloring the weaves. They're giving them slight little variations in color. So
I like what they're doing with the weaves this season.
Cool.
What do you think Landrin's intentions are really with Nynaeve? You know, I want you to be powerful, she says.
Well, does she want a recruiter to be a red?
Could be.
You know, I mean, if she wants to win and you see the most powerful piece on the table, you want to recruit that piece, right?
But what is she trying to win?
The Game of Thrones? No, wrong book. I don't know. I don't know enough about the world about. Well, I mean, we've got a last battle coming up, right? We've got, you know,
if you believe what we saw at the end of last season, the last battle already happened.
Right. Yeah. Is it not common? So it's not.
Everybody believes the last battle is going to come eventually.
Right. But they don't believe that was the last battle.
Right now, everyone's pretty confident that that was the last battle. I think.
Really?
I think so. So they said, we're going to the Eye of the World and we're going to fight the last battle.
And they fought a battle.
Right.
Okay. I don't know what game then that there is for her to win. Maybe other than the... The Amyrlin seat. You know, because she pretty hacked off that. Remind me the current Amyrlin seat's
Swan.
Name. Yeah. Swan is she didn't. She's got issues with that.
She sure does.
So
she sure does.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I'll just say here, we're in season one of an 8-season run. Do you think the last battle really already happened?
No.
Yeah, I think we might be in for some surprises, even if you haven't watched the trailer where they spoil half of the season.
Okay. Not that I would know.
Right. All right, let's move on. The Shinarans finish burying the village's dead and the Dark Friend Shinaran. When Perrin asks Ingtar why he's burying the Dark Friend, Ingtar rebuffs Perrin's call for revenge. Perrin recalls his fond memories of Padan Fain before the Trolloc attack and his trauma after the betrayal. Ingtar says perhaps Fain had a reason, but Perrin might not like the answer. Perrin is really, he's, you know, speaking of Hulk.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a rage inside me, and the closer we get to finding him, the more it grows.
Yeah, he's going to unleash some wolf energy, I think, when when they find him.
Yeah. He's a werewolf a little bit.
So this burial thing that...
We kind of already hashed this out a bit.
Yeah, we did. Just them laying him in the ground in that pattern gave me... So that's a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's a 5. They laid him out in a 5-star pattern, not 6. So I don't know what they were doing with that. But, you know, this is just me. It gave me some Game of Thrones episode 1 vibes in the snow with, you know, the walkers laying out bodies in patterns. It was just a little thing. And this idea of honoring the dead, even though – so here – so his parent is struggling with his rage and wanting to seek revenge and in danger of having his revenge consume him and take him to a place where, hey, can you really come back from that? The leader, Ingtar, says, but you know, he's modeling a different behavior, which is I'm honoring these dead. I'm honoring even
very
one of
gracious.
My enemies. Very. And that's keeping him level and even where Perrin is feeling the rage grow in him.
Right. Ingtar says maybe Fain had a reason.
Oh, that's what it was.
I don't know if, I don't know if any reason justifies bringing Trollocs to a village and having them kill everybody in the village.
Right. No, but what I had this thought at the back of my head, and that's what I was trying to remember, was it goes back to the beginning scene when the Dark One says to the little girl, well, maybe the Trolloc's just hungry. Have you ever thought of that? So what's the motivation here? What's the, why did he do what he did? And it's very easy in fantasy tropes or sci-fi trope, you know, stories to be, well, oh, they're just evil. Dungeons and Dragons has community has gone through this whole thing. Is a race, are orcs inherently evil? Are goblins inherently evil?
Right. Even and if the Tolkien community talks about it, right? With,
yes, exactly.
What's his name from season one? I've blocked out that. Right. But so, actually, that was probably the best part of season one was the gray.
Yes.
The grayness of the orcs.
Right, exactly. And so, you know, if we're playing games or we're teaching this thing where we can just blanket say, oh, these are evil and therefore must be killed or eradicated from the world, that becomes problematic for us in this world, in our primary world, right? What are we messing with there? What thoughts are we laying down? And so, even though, you know, we're saying, well, okay, well, what's the motivation of this creature? Or what's the motivation of this individual? What's Joel's motivation in The Last of Us?
Oh, my God.
Is he a monster?
I'm not touching that one again. You ain't baiting me into that one.
So it's cool. Like, I like the fact that they're talking about some morality related issues here and values related issues here. So depth to the story. That's interesting. Yeah.
Again, the dialogue is a level up from last season. I really am enjoying this quite a lot more.
And, you know, as we're talking about this episode, the more I'm appreciating it, even in our conversation, because there is a, I can see the quality difference between season one and season two already.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So. Even compared to the best episodes of season one, I think.
Yeah. Agreed. Agreed.
Yeah.
It's confident. They feel confident in what they're doing now.
Absolutely. Yep. So Lan confronts Moiraine for shutting him out. Moiraine requests her dinner in the study that night, but Lan tells her to make it herself. Nynaeve brings Egwene a letter they received from Perrin. Egwene was making a lantern for Beltane, which Nynaeve forgot about. Perrin's letter says they've lost the trail to Fane, and that Beltane has him thinking about Rand and Matt. He laments that those remaining are scattered and unable to protect each other. Perrin's a poet.
Nice.
You know, he's just saying, we're like people with shields and we can't put our backs against each other. I was like, this is nice, Perrin. You should go into this. Maybe you shouldn't be a blacksmith. You should be a poet.
Right. Well, you know, sometimes, you know, the physical arts and the literary arts are, there's a connectivity between them.
He's got a lot of time to think about poems.
Yeah. You know, at least in a modern context, we have cowboy poets, right? That's a thing.
Okay. So okay, I'm not aware of this. So
the troubadours were a thing.
Okay, yeah.
So, you know, they were more about love, I think. But, you know, yeah, love through expression. I mean, even we go to Tolkien, right? And the Barovian, you know, group
the TCBS
and stuff. You know, they were, you know, they went to war, but they were still, you know, connected to these greater thoughts and things. Anyway, I digressed.
Yep.
As we are wont to do on this podcast. Beltane is... Did we have Beltane in
That was the night
one?
Where the Trollocs attacked.
Right.
So this is the anniversary of the episode one.
Yep. I didn't clock that. That is... Okay, that makes
sense. Remember, we had all the lanterns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that was the night that they attacked. And they're all like, oh my gosh, a year passed. And Nynaeve, who was the wisdom of the village, who was all into this ritual stuff,
right,
forgot that it's even Beltane because she's so distracted with her own problems.
Okay, good. Okay, that gives a lot more context. Thank you.
Notice too that Nynaeve has kept her braid while Egwene has removed it. So Nynaeve wants to retain more connection with her hometown than Egwene does. They're telling us visually what they're feeling there.
Okay.
Yet Egwene is the one who remembers to make a lantern.
Right. Nice. Nice. Okay, cool. And I like that these two, you know, sisterly characters, there's twinnings, there's sort of, you know, one is doing this while the other's not doing that. And then while the other one is doing something else that the other one's not doing. So it's nice.
Right.
Nice twinning in the storylines.
They're supporting each other well, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. It's a shame when
really strong actors really leaning into the role. So great stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't mention earlier, but there was this moment where Nynaeve goes to Egwene's store and is like, Egwene, I need to talk, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's
yeah.
not there. She's with yeah. Alana.
Right. Yep. And then so yeah. she goes down and encounters Lyanna. So
Leandrin, yep.
Leandrin, sorry, I apologize.
Yep. Lyanna is another character. That's why I'm correcting you.
Yeah, yeah. No, no.
There's too many names for us to start mixing them up.
By episode 8, I will. I promise. I will be much better.
That's all right. That's all right.
Oh, so pivotable. Okay, here we go. An important scene coming up yeah. next here. I see.
Indeed, Leanne reads the same letter to Matt while omitting parts about him and taunting him with his absence in his friends' minds. He insists he's not a threat to the Aes Sedai. He hasn't touched a dagger in months and asks what she wants with him. She wishes him a merry Beltane and leaves him in captivity. First of all,
wait. I have a first question.
Go ahead.
I have a first question for you. New actor.
That's what I was saying. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. What do you think? Are you vibing? What's the vibe check here?
All right, I don't want to make a judgment right now because
okay, fair
this
enough.
Was a very cool. dark scene, and yeah. I saw him for about 3 minutes, not even
3 minutes, yeah.
And it was a dark scene, and he acted very darkly, and I did not get to see him be the Matt that I love.
Be Matt, okay.
So got I'm it. Not. I'm going to reserve judgment.
That is a fair call.
If I were going to do it based on this scene, didn't love it, but
okay.
I think that he really hasn't had the opportunity to show me yet, so I'm going to reserve myself.
Okay. Got it. Yep. All right. So now,
what do you think, though?
For the actor, same thing. I'm reserving judgment. I mean, I could see the physicality that they're sort of going for. He's a bit more fair haired, which the mm-hmm. original actor had that dark.
Black hair, basically.
Yeah, hair was very black. But I have to say, the thing that obviously, you know, really caught me out was that Leandrin is there, mm-hmm. keeping
She's held him captive.
Yeah, and really messing with him and being a not nice person.
Yeah, omitting parts about him in the letter. Oh, it mm-hmm. must be hard to hear that you're not in their letter. It's like, we just heard the letter. And right. that was honestly really brilliant storytelling, is yeah, to have yeah. them talk about how much they're missing him right into the scene where she's like, well, you're not even mentioned.
Yeah, so a lot of questions there. This scene just caused me to pop in a lot of directions. And then he's at the end there. He's I think this is in a moment. He's digging in the brickwork at some point.
Yeah, so that's a little later. I'll mention that in a bit.
Okay, cool.
But I gotta ask, what are they doing with this plotline? Because we know that Matt was ridden out of the last two episodes of season one because the actor had to drop out.
Right.
You know that's why he was not in the last two episodes. That's why he didn't enter the ways. And that, I think, was one of the worst parts of the COVID shutdown for mm-hmm. the show, which was they lost a fan favorite character who is beloved and was, I thought the actor was doing a great job. Barney was his name, Barney mm-hmm. Harris. And I thought he was doing a great job. Unfortunately, I don't know why, but he wasn't able to come back for season two either. And yeah, I'm hoping that Donal is able to do a great job as Matt now. I don't know where they're going with this because there's a lot different. Like Matt was cured of the dagger addiction, it seemed, in season one. I mean, he's not in the books by this point. That's mm-hmm. that's part of book two, is he still has this dagger addiction that they have to deal with. It doesn't seem that they're bringing it back. He mentions it, though, so I don't know if they will.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, we had that dagger basically possessing him.
Right, right. And he seems to be not in a good way about that.
Right.
So.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, this was a big, you know, and they saved these last couple of scenes for the end of this, right? So as we're saying, well, what happened to Matt? What happened to
right.
Rand? You know, we're boom, and then now we've got questions, and now we have energy to take us into
right.
episode two, which is
right.
from a show construction, from a producing an episode of television, these are all good signs that that signal to me that the showrunners and the writers understand pacing and flow. And fingers crossed that they will continue with that so that we feel like we really got a good ride for first 8 episodes.
Yeah. And I think this would have done fine as a single premiere. I don't think it needed to be a triple premiere.
A triple. Yeah. I don't know what.
I'm very confused by Amazon's strategy here.
Yeah. Triple, double, whatever, you know. Yeah. You've cut your, you know, if you did a double, right? That's a common thing. You've now shortened your season, you know, people talking about Amazon by 1 week.
Right.
But I don't know what else is in the programming matrix, what other, you know, sports or other things that they don't want. Right.
I don't know. But enough speculation. Let's move on. Perrin and Egwene light and send off lanterns in separate parts of the world. Egwene mourns Rand and Nynaeve promises not to leave her. Matt tampers with the brick in the wall and Rand, with a shaved head, lights his own lantern. We get a little hint to Rand here, seasoned with ginger, as I said. although he's hiding the ginger right now. He's hiding his red hair right now.
Yeah.
Because he does not want to be recognized. Yeah. Right. What do you think Rand's doing? Where do you think he's going?
No idea. Don't know enough about the world. Don't know enough about nothing. Just that he went off at the end. And obviously we have some stuff in the trailers that, you know, indicates that he's in some sort of romantic relationship, that he's experimenting with, you know, Sith holocrons, trying to understand his power. Sorry. We just, we were in prep for Ahsoka. So I'm like steeped in Star Wars lore right now. So yeah, they're setting us a mystery. They're engaging our curiosity, our natural curiosity. So,
right. Yeah. It's, so in the book at this point, Rand and Matt are with Perrin on that chase for the horn.
Okay.
So we are very far off from where were in the book. So I don't know where they're going with him either. I have ideas based on the trailer where they're going with him, but I can't say for sure.
Okay. Well, you know, seemed fine to me. I didn't have any issues with with what they gave us so far.
Yeah. Let's go back to the Aes Sedai country house.
Yes.
Lan, Varin, Tomas,
set on VRBO. Can you look for Aes Sedai on the...
Airbnb. Yep. Lan, Varin, Tomas, and Adelaus wait for Moiraine to show up to dinner, which Lan insists she will. Varin explains to Lan how traumatic it is to be cut off from the One Power. She says most of women die afterward, but Moiraine keeps going, carrying water every day and maintaining strength. Tomas tells Lan the bond between a warder and Aes Sedai is not the only way they can communicate. He gives Lan the advice to listen instead of speaking. Lan's line here, I think that's great. The first time in my life someone's told me I need to be quiet.
Great line. I got a good chuckle from that as well. Because he is such the strong silent type. So it was a nice little play.
Yeah. That was good. I like the scene. It was a good way to give exposition to what's happening inside Moiraine's head.
Right. And it nicely, the prior two scenes also ground us with characters and with our emotions just before what happens after the scene, which is very violent and very intense. So again, good show construction. And I also like the fact that Lan gets the advice he needs and he can hear it. Not only is it given to him, but he can actually hear it. He actually takes it on board and goes for a change. And then when he goes, she's not there. Sorry, dude.
You know,
that sucks for you.
Yeah. So let's get there. Lan brings Moiraine dinner, but her absence alerts him that something's wrong. Moiraine mounts her horse and is attacked by Myrdrals. Moiraine takes one down before a second one slices her in the stomach. Lan then comes to the rescue. The two are almost overpowered before the other Aes Sedai use the One Power to defeat the Shadow Spawn. It also appears for a moment that Moiraine might be beginning to channel again.
Yeah.
Lan asks what Moiraine isn't telling him. That's what they, what are you not telling me?
Right.
I'd be pretty confused too.
Are you able to channel and you're like, can they block their connection intentionally?
They can just not touch the source.
Between an Aes Sedai and a warder.
They can mask it. They can.
Yeah.
I don't think that they've said that in the show, but that's the thing they can do. Yeah. They can block it.
Can the warder, do that or just the Aes Sedai?
Only the Aes Sedai.
That would make sense. That would be logical.
Because they're the ones with the weave, right? They're the ones who channel.
Exactly. So pretty intense. Were these, tell me these creatures again. I apologize.
The Myrdrawls. They're the also called Fades, if that's easier for
Fade,
you.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I remember Fade from the,
I don't remember what they called them in season one. Exactly. They're Fades, Myrdrawls. I think there's another name for them too. But they're one of the things I like about the world building of Wheel of Time is like different regions of the world will have different names for the same thing.
Sure. Yeah.
And makes sense. So Myrdrawl is like the proper name for them, but
okay. Is that the scientific, the binomial Latin name?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So the Myrdrawls, those were the same Myrdrawls. So they just weren't killing them. They were wounding them, but they kept reanimating.
No, if you slice the head off,
yeah,
they die. But
okay.
If you don't, then they can't.
Because it wasn't until the other Aes Sedai came that they actually seemed to functionally defeat them.
I think there were multiple. I think that was the problem. There were more than they could handle.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. That's what I read that as.
The screener, I don't know if it's a screener or if they'll change it on in production, but it was very dark. It was hard to follow some of what was going on.
It was. So. I had to blast my brightness.
Yeah. Cool battle. Great special effects. Great action. I'm looking forward to more of this kind of stuff. It was really... I liked the suspense and the tension. We knowing that Moraine, you know, not only is she not connected to her warder, right, which puts her at a big tactical disadvantage, which she is not used to.
Right.
That she is mortal now. She can be hurt. She can be wounded. Mm-hmm. She can be, you know, taken out by these creatures. And so it really felt the danger level here with this.
Well, remember, so, Moiraine was injured last season, too, because one of the rules is you can't heal yourself as an Aes Sedai.
Right.
Cannot heal yourself. But she is with other Aes Sedai, so we know that they'll be healed up for next episode.
But it also gives us a good insight into the fact that even without her power, she's a wily tactician.
Yeah. She was able to fight.
Yep. And she did this little thing with her foot in the dirt. I'm not sure what that was, but whatever sort of tactical, stratagem.
Yeah.
I appreciated all that. And at the fact that at the end, both her and Lan end up pretty injured just goes to gives you the power scale for these enemies.
Yeah.
Right.
So Myrdrawl are extremely powerful.
Yeah.
They just are. They're terrifying. It's basically the idea is if you have a bunch of Trollocs and an Aes Sedai might make it out. If you have a Myrdrawl, one Myrdrawl, that's already a fair fight. You know, like that's already very scary.
Okay. Are the Myrdrawls, do they look like you want them to look from your own imagination in the books?
Yeah. I really didn't think that much about their faces because they're kind of not described in detail. Just that they, you know, there's basically no face. There's basically no eyes or whatnot. Uh-huh. And they always have the hoods up when they're talking to people. But they can talk in the books, which is something that I don't see happening in the show with these guys.
Right.
But they can like... sort of like the Black Riders can talk and the Nazgul can talk in the Lord of the Rings, right?
Right, right.
You're not really going to hear it very often, but it can happen.
Okay. The one Aes Sedai, and I apologize her name too, who's weaving, she weaves some fire magic. And
seems like it.
It's red. The weave is red and it goes as it goes down to the thing. Yep. So again, they're being, and then when Moraine is thinking that, you know, she's starting to get a little bit of weave action going, it's kind of a greenish tinge to it. So I think, you know, after having this conversation, I'm going to start paying attention a lot more to the weave and to the colors that we're going here. Cause I think it's just I'm just going to nerd out on it a little bit. I think it's a cool detail to have.
Yeah. I like it. I like it. It's, it's cool. The channeling is looking a lot better this season. I think they are hinting that Moiraine is starting to have this bit, like maybe she's not fully cut off here.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yep. Now, is she going to get in trouble if she starts weaving again?
Why would she get in trouble?
Didn't she get it taken away from her? Or did she
no, the dark one did it. The dark one did it.
Whoa, wait. Okay, so
cut
now
her off
I'm
at the end of the season. Yeah.
Okay. I that is a detail I forgot because I thought she...
No, the oath rod was you can't come back to Tarvalon.
That's what it was. Okay.
That's what she swore on. And that's the same thing that they use for the three oaths, you know.
Right.
Don't use the power as a weapon. Don't speak an untrue word. They blah, blah, blah.
Right. Cool. Yeah. Okay. Wow. So this that was a lot, right? There's a lot of names. There's a lot of places, a lot of characters. My brain feels like it's going to explode because we have Foundation and Ahsoka and this.
But at least we're doing this in mid-August and not all in one day.
Yes, it's true. Yeah, we have. Thank gosh. Thankfully.
Thank Prime.
Thank you for getting this, you know, arranging our screeners, because it is going to save our brains. So
I am happy we have them. And you know what else I'm happy for, David, though, is that we got plenty of content coming, and I think it's time we talk about it.
That sounds like a good plan to me.
So I'm sure that some people are going to be marathoning this and some people are going to be spacing this out, but we are recording this August 18th. So if you are hearing things that may not still hold true as far as when things are coming out, sorry. But the main idea will be there. The main shows we're covering will be there. Our monthly podcast will be there. And Alicia and Maester Anthony stuff will be there. So let's talk about our affiliates first. We've got Alicia doing her Wool Shift Dust feed, going through Dune, as we mentioned before. She's doing a read-through of a couple of the books. She is doing some video game talk, and she's talking about the Dune movie that never happened. That's one of the things she's covering,
yep.
As well as the 2021 Dune. And she's going to get you really prepped for Dune Part 2 coming out later this year. So check that out on the Wool Shift Dust feed. You can find that in the show notes. Properly Howard Movie Review, on the other hand, is having a raucous good time, as the kids say. And I can't listen to this episode, these podcasts in public, because I start laughing out loud and I look like a weirdo.
Yes,
and,
it's true.
They're very funny. They're very funny. This is coming out September 1st, so the next thing coming out is The Wolfman. They're covering remakes, so this is a remake of a movie called The Wolfman. This one came out in 2010. They just covered RoboCop, the remake that came out in 2014. Coming up, they've got The Wicker Man, The Departed. You got plenty of stuff happening here. I it's a great time.
We should make mention too that Anthony and Steve work in seasons, right? So they'll chunk out a group of podcasts, movies, topics, whatever. And for this new season, with our, you know, within our sort of mutual podcast support organization, or whatever you want to call us, they decided that they wanted
Alliance.
To do, Alliance. There you go. I like that. They decided they wanted to do remakes this season. So, you know, next season, it may be a different thematic element for the movies. And the thing I will say about any of these movies, be it White Man Can't Jump or RoboCop or Cape Fear, you don't have to have seen either the original or the remake to enjoy these podcasts, because Steve and Anthony are funny, they're affable, and they talk about a lot of pop culture nonsense. So if you just like a rambling good conversation, then this is a podcast for you.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great time. On the Lorehounds main feed, if you are listening to this, because remember, we're posting this on both our main feed, our Firehose feed, and our Wheel of Time specific feed. So if you're only getting Wheel of Time stuff, you're missing out on a lot. Head over to our Firehose feed, which you can also find on the show notes. That's going to have Foundation Season 2, which we are getting towards the end of, but not quite there yet.
It's been a good season. It has been a good season.
Yeah. Yeah. Much better than season one. Excellent. And I think hopefully that's a theme here between the Wheel of Time and Foundation.
Yes. We have a good content runway for the next few years. As long as the strike and as long as the AMPTA can pull its head out of its nether regions and, you know, get into a good agreement with the actors and the writers, we have some nice content, nice juicy content in the future for us.
Yeah. Well, the wheel weaves. Anyway, Ahsoka is going strong as well. If you want other weekly coverage, we're covering the show on Disney Plus. I haven't seen it yet because this is mid-August, but it looks great from the trailers.
Dude, I just watched the trailer today. Did you see that one with the fight?
It looks really good.
Rosario Dawson was just exceptional, exquisite. I was jumping out of my chair in my office at home, like screaming. Yep. It was crazy. Yep. So I was like, what's the guy? What's that meme? I'm doing it on the screen. You can
Yeah. You know, jazz hands.
Yes. No. Who's the person who's doing it? It's one particular actor. Anyway, I'm screaming and holding my hands, shaking my hands next to my head.
Yep.
That meme.
Yeah. So it looks great. I'm really hoping it's great. Of course, you can get all of these podcasts as early as possible, because some of these have embargoes, but as early as possible by joining our Patreon, as well as exclusive podcasts like Second Breakfast and Shireside Chats. You get them ad-free on there. And our top patrons, our $10 patrons, are our lore masters, and we like to give them a thank you every single episode. David, hit me up with the list.
Yeah. Samartian, Cyrus, Mark H., Michelle G., Michael G., Michelle E., my apologies, David W., Brian P., Nick W., SC, Peter OH, Bettina W., Adam S., Nancy M., Lavinia T., Duve 71, Brian 8063, Frederick H., Sarah L., Gareth C., Eric F., Matthew M., Sarah M., DJ Miwa, Andra B., Kwang Yu, Laura G., Deadeye, Jedi, Bob, and Nathan T. Thank you all so very much. You know, John, as I look over this list, I just realize that for some of these people, they've been with us for a while now.
Yeah.
And it just it is really nice to have this core group of folks who make sure that we can keep the lights on and the bits flowing over here at Lorehound Central. So absolutely. Thank
the
you.
Wheel turning, the wheel of time the turning, weave, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
It keeps the water in the wheel. I'm not going to belabor this metaphor too much, but also to our lore fiend and our lore,
hounds,
hounds. Thank you. This was a long podcast. Our lore hounds. Thank you for all of your support, because everybody who does subscribe to our Patreon, it means a lot to us to know that we are developing a community and that folks are appreciating the kind of content that we're producing.
Absolutely. Thank you all.
Cool.
Now, if you are on the Patreon, this is going to drop minutes before the next episode. So we are going to put these all out on the same time, relatively, in the wee hours of the morning on September 1st when we can. If you're on the public feed, they're going to be a few hours spaced apart, because that's just, it helps the public feed a lot.
Yeah.
So if you want these earlier, of course, patreon.com/lorehounds. Unless there's anything else, David.
No.
We'll see you for episode 2, which everyone will be watching shortly.
Sounds good. I'm excited.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions, feedback, and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all our episodes at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities.